This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. We have just 4 days till the New Hampshire primary, and the whole country will watch tonight when seven of the Democratic presidential candidates take the stage in Manchester, New Hampshire, for tonight's debate. Well, Radio Boston's Chris Siderick is in Manchester right now, and he joins us. Hey there, Chris.
Hey, Tiziana.
Okay, so you've been reporting for us from New Hampshire most of the week this week. What's it been like today?
The phrase that keeps popping into my mind as I've gone across the city today is the calm before the storm. Last few days, basically, you couldn't throw a rock without hitting a candidate event or a rally or a town hall or some sort of campaign function. Today, after this morning, it really kind of feels like most candidates have gone into full debate prep mode, gone off the trail. And I think that's probably smart because I've talked to a lot of voters over the last few days, and a lot of them have told me, I'd say the majority have told me, tonight's debate actually will play a big part in their decision for next Tuesday.
Well, it's 3 hours long, so I'm glad to hear that it actually has some import. Listen, earlier today, you attended an election security simulation. That's pretty interesting. Tell us about it.
It was called Operation Blackout New Hampshire. So the best way for me to describe it is to call it a war game simulation around election security. It was put on by Cyber Reason, which is a private cybersecurity company. And it involved their staff basically running the event, but they invited folks from local law enforcement, federal agencies, state government. And I was fascinated by the folks who showed up and attended this event. They had officers from Concord Police Department, Manchester Police Department. There was a Secret Service agent there, someone who works IT for the city of Concord, and former Boston Police Commissioner Ed Davis was there as well.
Well, that's a pretty serious group of folks. So what was the simulation like? What was going on?
So they basically split everybody into two teams. You had the red team and the blue team. And they set this exercise in a fictional city on an election day. It's in a swing state, and a swing city could have major impacts on the presidential election. And the red team is essentially trying to undermine the election as a nefarious actor. And the blue team is trying to protect it, keep order, maintain the public trust. I want to give you a little taste of kind of what that sounded like. It's basically a collaborative effort. They're sitting around their two tables. Here's an example of the blue team talking. This is Lieutenant Ken Louie from the Manchester Police Department. And he's asking his fellow blue team members if they should reach out to federal authorities for assistance at this point.
When we reach out to FBI at this point to at least let them know that the city is clearly under attack.
Yes.
Adversary is under attack. An adversary shouldn't be dealing with this by itself.
Right.
We would obviously involve the FBI and bring their
feds.
Yeah, Secret Service, bring resources to bear in terms of determining who's conducting these attacks.
Okay, so lots of language about attacking there. What sorts of vulnerabilities did the red team attack?
That was one of the really surprising things for me, because I had kind of the normal headline stuff you would think of, misinformation on social media or trying to undermine things at polling locations. But actually, the first thing the red team did was cause traffic jams. They hacked into the city traffic lights, and that actually caused turnout to go way down in the simulation, which was a big problem in terms of election integrity. So, I mean, it was everything from social media. They hacked the local news at one point, phone system, the sewer system even, the power grid. There was a wide range of different methods that the red team was using. At one point, there was kind of a poignant moment. One of the red team members said they could put out misinformation that there was a terrorist attack using radioactive material, have people shelter in place. Former Boston Police Commissioner Ed Davis said you wouldn't really even have to go that far.
Just the reports of indicators, radiation indicators going off. You don't have to wrap it around a terrorist event. You just have to say, this is the information that we have. And I think people are going to say, I'm just going to stay home.
That was actually a big part of the red team's focus, was getting people to stay home, which isn't necessarily the first thing you think of in terms of election integrity, but obviously would have a major impact on the results.
Well, and Ed Davis was the police commissioner who shut down the city during the marathon bombing, so we know he knows what it means to make people stay home. You're kind of freaking me out. So what was the purpose of this event, and do you think it achieved it?
I said that was great and terrifying, and everybody pretty much shared my sentiments there. So Bill Keeler, he's one of the senior directors at Cyber Reason. I asked him, is he concerned at all that this type of event actually could contribute to public mistrust, the very thing they're trying to prevent? He said it's more about getting the folks involved in election security to think outside the box so they'll be ready when stuff happens in the real world.
The hope is that we use these opportunities to practice during peacetime to have government agencies on the local level, the state level, the federal level, and law enforcement agencies practice.
So that word practice kind of made a lot of sense as I watched this play out. It makes sense. You got to practice to be good at something, right?
Yeah.
But there were those moments of kind of collaborative effort that created a learning moment for folks. I'm thinking, for example, at one point the blue team was dealing with the fact that they had deployed extra officers to deal with the traffic. Red team responds by putting out misinformation on social media that those officers are there for stop and frisk and increased deportations to try to discourage people from showing up to the polling locations. Two of the police officers basically said, oh, we should just put out a statement, say that's factually incorrect. But Jonathan Smullen, who handles IT for the city of Concord, had a different suggestion.
But I've heard in the past where police departments reach out to minority leaders and get them out into the public.
That's
sector.
Not a bad idea. Mm-hmm. Reach out to your community leaders,
right,
minority groups.
The minority
yeah.
groups are more likely to trust them.
Yes.
So if they see them interacting.
I like that, yeah.
So the direction might be have district police leaders contact community leaders.
So, Chris, this is obviously not the kind of stuff that happened in Iowa, and yet listening to you, it makes me feel like I'd want every state to be doing something like this. What are the big takeaways?
Yeah, I mean, it was essentially really drove home the point how hard this is for folks working in law enforcement and state and local governments, because hackers just basically kept throwing stuff at the wall. Again, Bill Keeler, the director for Cyber Reason, told me that's pretty indicative of what real-world authorities have to face. And I got to say, when I was watching some of the local police and state officials' faces during this exercise, they were just shaking their heads and had these kind of exasperated looks. They just couldn't believe all the different vulnerabilities. And afterwards, none of them would go on the record with me to share their thoughts or reactions, which, to be honest, I thought itself was pretty telling.
Yeah. Okay, Chris, hang tight. I want to check in with one of our other reporters for a minute. We're going to turn now to WBUR's Fred Tice. Yesterday, we checked in on the Bernie Sanders campaign after he declared from New Hampshire that he basically won Iowa through the popular vote in that chaotic caucus. But, of course, there's another candidate claiming victory in Iowa. That's former South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg. Fred Tice has been following the Buttigieg campaign in New Hampshire all week, and he joins us now from Merrimack. Fred, welcome back.
Hi, Tiziana.
So, Fred, we had Sanders saying, I won the popular vote in Iowa, Pete Buttigieg saying, yeah, but I got the delegates. So he thinks he's got momentum. How's he trying to capitalize on that?
Well, he's coming up in the polls here. The daily poll from the Boston Globe, WBZ, and Suffolk University now has him at 23%, just 1 point behind Sanders, who's still the leader. And people are packing Buttigieg's events. I was at an event yesterday, where they clearly did not expect so many people to show up. They had people standing room only, but you really couldn't move in this event. It was at an event at the American Legion here in Merrimack, and people were trudging through the snow, walking on the street because there were no sidewalks. They had to park like far away at the high school, and they got there.
So, what is his strategy for packing them in and getting their votes on Tuesday?
Well, he's really appealing to the moderate voters who might also like Joe Biden or Amy Klobuchar. And at this American Legion Hall yesterday, he really played up his military background as giving him the ability to appeal to people on the left and the right. Let's listen.
I often think about the fact that when I was getting into a vehicle, whether it was taking something across town in Kabul or taking a trip on the open road to Bagram, the people getting in the vehicle with me could not care less if I was a Democrat or a Republican.
So, Fred, how's that?
Go ahead. Yeah.
Well, I was just going to ask you how it's resonating.
Well, so I met a woman at that rally, for example, who had unenrolled from the Democratic Party, so she could vote for Buttigieg in the Democratic primary, I also met this woman who spoke to me whose brother served as a Marine in some of the fiercest fighting in Iraq, and she thought Buttigieg gets the challenges that military families face. By the way, veterans are a big part of the electorate here, more than 10%, which makes New Hampshire one of the states with the highest concentration of veterans.
So, you know, one of the things that I noticed, Fred, is according to the latest Boston Globe WBZ Suffolk University poll, we have this thing where Buttigieg and Sanders are basically mirror opposites of each other when it comes to the age of their supporters. Buttigieg is the youngest candidate but has strong support with older voters. Sanders is the oldest candidate and has strong support with younger voters. Are you seeing evidence of that, and how's that playing out?
Somewhat. I mean, there are a lot of older voters at the Buttigieg events, but I'm also finding a lot of younger voters. For example, this woman that I was just telling you about, she was a young voter, and there were quite a few young voters who were there at the Buttigieg event. And there was the same thing at a Buttigieg event I went to in Concord earlier in the week.
All right, that is WBUR reporter Fred Tice. Fred, I appreciate you giving us time today. Thanks.
Thanks, Tiziana.
So turning back to Chris Sitterick, Chris, just to tie things up, what are your overall impressions of the week up there in New Hampshire?
I think over the week, the two major themes that have jumped out to me. The first is this sense of uncertainty. Uncertainty to the fact that there are so many candidates and folks aren't quite sure who really is emerging as the front runner, but then also directly tied to the Iowa results. Multiple people have told me that coming out of Iowa, they had no idea what to make of this race and where candidates stood against one another, and that's really kind of affected their approach. They're also looking for, the vast majority looking for, either a connection to the voters or empathy or a candidate that gets it or that's real. Lots of different terms for essentially the same concept, and I think that will make a big difference down the final stretch here.
All right, that is Radio Boston's Chris Sitterick. Chris, thanks.
Thank you.
And listeners will be broadcasting Radio Boston live from Manchester, New Hampshire on Monday and Tuesday next week for the primary. Make sure you join us then. Listen, after the break, we're going to do Week in Review. So since it's Friday, that means our panelists are here. And before we go to the break, I want to get their reactions to what we just heard from New Hampshire. Jim Sturgis is here. He's the executive director of the Pioneer Institute. Jim, thanks.
It's good to be with you.
Also, John Carroll, who is WBUR senior news analyst. John, welcome back.
Good to be here.
So let's just take a quick second. I want to get both of your reactions to what we heard from Chris and Fred in New Hampshire. John.
Well, this is the stage where the horse race coverage is at DEFCON 4. The Boston Globe right now has a headline that says, who won the last 24 hours in the presidential race?
Wow.
And the Globe, BZ Suffolk, they're polling every day. And one of the interesting things is Buttigieg 2 days ago was at 19%, but there were 14% undecided in that poll, which is a lot. And you've got that, and you've got the other X factor is the 42% of independents up in New Hampshire who can pick either primary. I don't think that many of them are going to pick the Republican primary. I could be wrong, but I think the Democratic primary is where the action is, and so they'll have a big influence on that as well.
Jim, I saw you nodding.
Yeah, no, I agree with all of that. I think New Hampshire voters historically like to surprise people, right? They like to cut against what is the what's considered to be the conventional wisdom. The high concentration of veterans, I thought, was a really interesting point because that's something where those voters like to stick together. They have a unique kind of experience, and I think that would appeal to them. I do think that given the fiasco in Iowa, this is the one that matters. This is the one that actually winnows out the field. And for Senator Warren, it could be a really hard hit to her campaign.
So I want to just shift quickly to a couple of other big national stories this week where we had strong local players. We had the State of the Union. The president delivered it on Tuesday night. Seth Moulton walked out. And Ayanna Pressley boycotted it entirely. This is, of course, after Nancy Pelosi, or at the same time that Nancy Pelosi ripped up the president's speech. John, what's your take on these actions by elected representatives here in the Commonwealth?
Well, it's interesting. I don't know that it's unprecedented, but Seth Moulton tweeted out, you know, when the draft dodger started talking about how much he's done for the military, I walked out. I mean, that was just sort of one too many hypocrisies for Seth Moulton. Ayanna Pressley, I think that that she's basically taking the lead in something that is unusual, which is a real action-oriented pushback against Trump. And I think that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez joined her in boycotting, and I think that we may see more of that kind of thing going forward.
Jim, we heard a lot of cries about lack of decorum and appropriateness in any of those choices and some of the other ones that night, including Republicans chanting 4 more years during the State of the Union. What do you think about this decorum question, especially as it relates to our legislators?
I agree with it. I think the issue is, look, we know that Trump is a petulant child, a narcissist, and all the other things that give people great joy to say about him. Sadly, I think nothing that he did in his post-acquittal press conference, grievance fest, whatever that thing was, surprised us. That should bother us. But I think, you know, the whole idea, I think, that the Democrats once upon a time did say, though I never really believed this, but to be honest, when they go low, we go high. This is when he goes low, we become like him, and we're petulant children just like he is. Now, is there justification for it? Sure. Who started this? Sure. Whatever people want to say, that's fine. But I think about when I raise my kids, the way I talk to them about how to behave, and this is we're in a bad place, and that's not news to anybody.
So somebody who – go ahead, John.
I was just going to say the other thing is you can't out-Trump Trump. You'll never beat him. You know, Marco Rubio found that out. A whole bunch of people found that out. And, you know, Nancy Pelosi ripping up the speech, I'm sure that was cathartic, but it's just more ammunition for the Trumpiacs. And basically when he gets you to play his game, he's right where he wants to be.
All right. So one person who was a strong public figure in Massachusetts did not play his game this week, and that is former Massachusetts governor and now senator out of Utah, Mitt Romney, who voted to impeach President Trump on the first article, The Abuse of Power. Reactions to Mitt Romney? Either of you?
I got a nice email from Mitt Romney yesterday. I have to admit, a lot of people got a nice email from Mitt Romney yesterday talking about
variety?
His decision and linking to his speech. But here's the beginning of the last paragraph. I hope that with impeachment now behind us, the Senate can get back to the critical work at hand. And all I have to say to that is the Lord loves an optimist. I just don't see that happening.
Jim, how about you?
So, yeah, I mean, I think like this is a Mitt Romney is a good indication of where we are. 2 weeks ago, he was no hero to anyone. All of a sudden, he became a hero to people who loathed him just 2 weeks ago. That's kind of, again, where we are as a country. I think on the merits, he stated his case well, and he stated in a heartfelt way. He landed where I would have landed on one count. I think he sided with the Dems. On one count, he did not. I think that's also the correct decision. He made distinctions. He actually said the State of the Union had some positive things in that. And I think people who watch the State of the Union, this is my problem with the Democrats' reaction to it. When he's talking about low unemployment for a variety of different subpopulations, when he's talking about school choice and opportunities, that people couldn't clap for that. I mean, it just makes the Democrats look uncaring and out of sync with what people are actually thinking about. These people were doing the Britain Circus stuff in D.C., notwithstanding.
Okay, so John Carroll, WBUR Senior News Analyst, Jim Sturgis of Pioneer Institute, stick with us. We'll talk about the coronavirus in Boston and the MBTA's planned shutdown for repairs. I'm Tiziana Deering. This is Radio Boston.